I love F minor, the final movement from Haydn's Symphony No. 49, La Passione, played by the Ludwig Orchestra, and they were led by Barbara Hannigan. You're listening to Sunday Night at the TSO on the New Classical FM. I'm Kathleen Kajioka. Barbara Hannigan is an old friend to Toronto, having studied voice here at the University of Toronto once upon a time, before setting out to become one of the world's most heralded performers of new music, bar none. The celebrated soprano has since staked out new territory as a conductor, quite often executing both disciplines at the same time, which, having witnessed it myself, I have to say qualifies as an art unto itself. She returns to the TSO this month to sing the world premiere of a work written for her by Zoshi De Castri and Tash Awe called In the Half Light. And Barbara Hannigan joins me now. Barbara, welcome to Sunday Night at the TSO.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to start with that recording because, in as much as you're a contemporary music icon, I am a big fan of your Haydn. The way that you perform his music is exciting to me because I've often felt that he's someone who suffered from being underestimated, sort of ubiquitous, but undervalued. And your performances bring out so much more of the expressive possibilities in his music than I often hear. And I love that I'm an early music specialist saying this to a new music specialist. Is this ironic?
I'm not sure, but I'll take the compliment. I adore the music of Haydn. And actually, when I first started conducting, his symphonies became kind of a touchstone for me. And it's interesting because as a singer, I wasn't so fond of his vocal writing. You know, there are major works like The Creation and The Seasons. The Creation is a fantastic piece. The Seasons is a little maybe difficult to bring off always. But the symphonies are incredible dramatic works. I mean, there's some of them are just so theatrical. In fact, some of the material comes from his music that was written as incidental music for the theater, which I found out later. But I started basically putting a Haydn symphony onto almost every program that I was doing. For Haydn symphonies, I always buy my own entire set of parts for the orchestra. I work with my librarian to make sure that the parts are marked exactly the way I want them and give them to the orchestra that way. And then we start from there. So I have always really a dramaturgical and musical concept for each Haydn symphony that I do. So 49, which you just played, was the first Haydn symphony that I ever did. And that's also why I wanted to record it. And, you know, I do it in quite a romantic and full way. But, you know, other symphonies, you could hear it and it would be completely different. I think the red thread for me is that they all have a dramaturgical story going on in my perception. So that's where I come from in those.
You can definitely hear that. I just feel like every note is given its due in terms of its contribution to the energy.
Yeah.
There's nothing glossed over. It's just fantastic.
Thank you.
We look forward to seeing you back at the TSO, an orchestra that you performed with many times over the years. Does working with them feel a bit like coming home?
Well, it does. I mean, Toronto feels like coming home because, you know, although I'm from Nova Scotia, which is home. I moved to Toronto when I was 17. I studied for my final year of high school at the Etobicoke School of the Arts. And then I went directly into the University of Toronto studying with Mary Morrison. And I got to know, of course, I got to know the Toronto Symphony well as a listener. I was there at least once a week during my student years. And then I made my debut with them, gosh, maybe in the year 2000, somewhere around there, with the Ligeti piece. I remember, you know, learning basic things through my experience with the Toronto Symphony. Like, I remember when I did the Ligeti Mysteries of the Macabre with them for the first time, I couldn't believe that they were only going to have two rehearsals. Like, I didn't know that that's what symphony orchestras did. They only have, like, 2 or 3 days of rehearsals maximum before the first concert. So I remember Loie Fallis, who's still with the Toronto Symphony, you know, saying to me, well, this is actually normal. And, you know, and then later, you know, I started conducting them and was returning pretty regularly to conduct the orchestra. And yeah, there is a feeling of coming back. I mean, returning to a group of musicians that you have worked with before, with whom you have a rapport, with whom you have memories of certain repertoire and certain concert experience, you know, that builds into the joy of working together. Absolutely.
I wanted to touch on your time with Mary Morrison, and I learned that back in 2017, the University of Toronto awarded you both honorary doctorates together at the same time, which is a very beautiful thing. Yeah. Mary Morrison, 90 at the time, she's 95 now. And for our listeners, she has been a pillar of the voice department at U of T for decades, and she's taught dozens of fabulous singers, some of them familiar names, Adrian Pietrzonka, Misha Berger-Gosman, and then, of course, yourself. I had to ask you, as a Torontonian, about your time with her. Did you end up in her studio by design or by luck?
Well, by design, I think. What happened, actually, I started with her while I was at Etobicoke School of the Arts. And the thing was, my teacher in Nova Scotia, Sylvie McDonald, in Halifax, she had met Mary Morrison at a National Association of Teachers of Singing conference. And she had then written a kind of letter of introduction for me, asking Mary if she would hear me when I came to Toronto with a view for her to recommend a teacher for me. And what ended up happening was that then at age 17, I went, sang for Mary in her studio while I was in high school and when I'd just arrived in Toronto, and she decided that she would like to teach me. And you know, that was a life-changing experience because you meet someone that is, you know, she's an extraordinary musician. She has phenomenal ears. She's curious, open-minded. She has an affinity for all kinds of music, you know, and this was exactly the kind of person that I needed in my life. And she also recognized that I had a capacity for complex scores, and she encouraged me to explore that. And explore that in my voice and in my mind, and to go to the library and listen to many recordings and to go to concerts. And yeah, it was really one of those huge, you know, turning points of life when you think, oh, okay, how lucky was I? How lucky was I that, the stars aligned that that happened?
I wanted to ask you about crossing the threshold into conducting, which to me is a terrifying thing to do, just as an instrumentalist, I think. But the first time that you were set to stand in front of an orchestra, I imagine it was full of excitement, maybe also a bit scary. But I'm just wondering, how was it in anticipation of that moment versus then once you were up there doing it, leading your first rehearsal from the podium?
Yeah, so the first time I really conducted, I suppose, was with the Avanti Chamber Orchestra. That was in preparation for my debut, which was at the Châtelet in Paris. And it was Le Renard, the Fox, by Stravinsky for chamber orchestra and four male soloists, as well as singing and conducting Ligeti Mysteries of the Macabre. And funnily, the sing-conduct felt very natural, actually. That felt pretty, I mean, it was crazy, but in a way it was natural to me. The just conducting, that was really a very humbling experience because I was silenced, right? I couldn't use my voice anymore. And I had my hands, but I wasn't making the sound anymore. And so I remember that first downbeat, and yeah, it was, I always use the word humbling because I realized, you know, how much you need this collaborative, or I need the collaborative way of working. There is nothing for me dictatorial about conducting. There is nothing in a way hierarchical about conducting. You know, sometimes one person needs to lead more than others, and often it's the conductor, but not always. Over the years, I'm very thankful in realizing the kind of training that I had as a musician. And I remember in particular with a theater teacher, actually, named Richard Armstrong, who was working with us on resonating with others. And that's how I feel, you know, that my most recent conducting experience has been in the beginning of May with Munich Philharmonic, with Strauss, Metamorphosen, and Poulenc, La Voix Humaine, and that feeling of resonance with the others. So when I'm conducting Strauss Metamorphosen, I am in resonance with 23 string players. It doesn't matter that I'm not making the sound. We are all breathing, resonating together in this music. And that's something that, you know, you can only learn by being on the podium. No, of course, one needs to prepare and study the score and be meticulous in your feeling and imagination about the music and the harmony. But once you're on the podium, that's really when that communion can happen.
And by contrast, then, when you are now in a performance and singing only and not leading the orchestra, how does that feel?
It's great. It's fun. You know, I had a concert recently in Sweden where I was sharing the podium with my colleague, John Storgards. We did this program, actually a similar program in Toronto. And I was just singing a piece by Brett Dean. And it's a little bit, I wouldn't say it's like a holiday because it's really difficult. You know, there's a lot of different demands, but there are, you know, I don't have to look after absolutely everything. I have to keep my mind on it. I have to keep my eye on it, my ear on it. But, you know, in Toronto, it will be Gustavo Jimeno's responsibility to make sure that the orchestra is really on top of Zosha's new piece. And I have to make sure that I'm on top of my part. But it's a different kind of responsibility. So in a way, it's maybe a little bit more playful for me.
Tell us about the new work that you're going to be premiering. It's a world premiere written for you, as you say, by Zosha De Castri with text by Tesh Awe. Tell us about In the Half Light.
Yeah, beautiful title. I'm really, really looking forward to premiering it. You know, I suppose it's about displacement. It's about being away from home, whatever that may mean. And Tash and Zosha and I had quite a few conversations before Tash even started writing the text about the subject matter of the piece. And this topic was something that resonated with each of us, not only because our own experience, but, you know, of living not where we are from, but also the experience of refugees, our personal connection to the refugee situation. Some of the text comes from us sharing our experience and relationships with people that have been in refugee situations. So there are texts actually within the piece that the audience wouldn't know that are actually coming from my story or from Tasha's story or from Zosha's story. And the music is also developed in a really interesting way. There's even a kind of loon call in the piece, and it's funny because I don't remember if Zosha put the piece, the loon call in, because I told her that I do a very good loon call and that I used to do that when I was at home in Nova Scotia. We lived on a lake and I used to do the loon cry out to the loons on our lake, and they would cry back, they would call back. But I'm not sure if she put it in there before I told her this or after. It could be that she wrote it first and said she wanted something like a loon. And then I said, oh, I do a great loon call. And then I sent it to her on WhatsApp, like on a WhatsApp voice message, sent her my loon call. And then she tried to transcribe that. And so there are many personal moments. And now that I've said there's a loon call in the piece, you will understand that it's not only verbal text, but there are also some aspects where the text is deconstructed or a complete kind of vocalization, non-textual aspects of the piece. I think it's, I feel that it comes really from a heart-to-heart collaboration. And, you know, Zosha and I even met recently again in New York. We'd been meeting on Zoom for ages, and finally we met in New York with the score almost finished. This was in March. And we worked through certain sections of it and just fine-tuning. So I'm so excited now to sing the piece with TSO, to work with my colleagues instead of working alone, and to put it all together.
Well, it sounds like a beautiful process and written very much, not just for you, but with you. So that'll be incredible. you have a middleman this time, as you mentioned. Gustavo Gimeno will be on the podium conducting. Is this your first time meeting on stage, or have you worked with him before?
No, it's our first time working together. We've met once before in Paris. We sat in a cafe when I was singing at Paris Opera, and we had I think it was just as he was about to get the TSO job, and we had a really nice cup of tea and chat, but that was maybe 5 years ago, four years ago. So I'm super psyched now to really work together with him. So yeah, it will be a pleasure, I'm sure.
My next question comes by way of a compliment, in that you are among the most universally respected musicians I know in the field, which is saying a lot, because classical musicians, I mean, like any experts really, tend to be fairly hard to please and very judgy. But there's never been a person that I've seen who, hearing the name Barbara Hannigan, kind of shrugs and says, oh, she's okay, or she's overrated. That never happens. It's always the opposite, actually. And I'd have to say that has to do with, you know, your integrity, the consistent depth and commitment, intensity of your work, which I'm sure takes a lot of energy. And at the pace at which you go, I'm wondering, how do you keep it up? What goes into being able to sustain that quality?
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot. Like, when do you sleep? Do you just work all the time? Sleep is really important. That's kind of the most important thing when I'm working really hard, is to make sure that I get enough rest. I'm passionate about music and about what I do. So, you know, when you're in love with something or someone, I mean, you just have boundless energy. And I wouldn't say I have boundless energy, but I have a lot of energy. So I really love to work. And I got this from my parents, with a capacity for hard work. And then I developed that over time. And so I really, you know, I feel extremely fortunate. And as the years go on, I feel more and more fortunate to still be on stage, to still be performing live, you know, to be really in the thick of it. That's, for me, it's something I feel really, really thankful for. So that also gives me the drive to keep going. And, you know, of course, sometimes I get tired, or I took on too much, or I'm stressed because I feel like I might not have given myself enough time to prepare for everything on my plate. But most of the time, I'm in a state of happiness.
Well, we look so much forward to welcoming you back to Roy Thompson Hall. Barbara Hannigan, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
That was new music icon Barbara Hannigan. She'll be singing In the Half Light, a world premiere with the TSO, and a commission by the TSO, by Zosia DeCastri and Tash Awe, on May 19th and 21st. Tickets are available at tso.ca. And now let's hear her. This is Barbara Hannigan singing Alma Mahler's Die Stille Stadt, The Silent Town.